It's a real pleasure to be here and see you this morning. My thanks to you and to Gretchen for inviting me today. The story of democracy in America is really two stories that are difficult to reconcile and always in tension with each other. One story is the groundbreaking effort to rebel from monarchy and tyranny and to establish a form of government unlike any seen before, with checks and balances and separation of powers, freedoms of speech and assembly and press, rooted in inclusive values expressed in phrases such as "we the people," "created equal," "the general welfare," "e pluribus unum," and "with liberty and justice for all." The second story is the painful reality that in spite of those universal, inclusive-sounding words and ideals, our democracy from the beginning was far from universal or inclusive in practice. It did not recognize the humanity of slaves or indigenous peoples who were tortured, killed, treated as property, and driven from their lands. Women from the beginning were not allowed to vote. Religious intolerance was the norm in many of the early colonies, and men with property were enfranchised ahead of those without. If we attempt to weave these two stories together, the overarching question raised by American democracy is this: which of these two stories will ultimately prevail and define our future? The combined narrative of these stories is one of struggle. The struggle to make the inclusive promises of our democracy real, to expand the franchise of democracy in America so that our highest ideals might ring true instead of ringing hollow. There have been many very real victories in this struggle. One of the first victories was the inclusion of the Bill of Rights in the U.S. Constitution, declaring powerful rights for expression and assembly and for the protection of people accused of crimes. Another early victory was the religious inclusiveness of the Constitution, which could have but did not limit religious freedom to any one type of religion. Instead, it explicitly prohibited religious tests for elected office, and it prohibited the government from establishing one religion above others, with no mention of religion beyond that. We have seen in our nation's history the abolition of chattel slavery, although it took a civil war to do it. In the reading we heard a few moments ago, Abraham Lincoln described this victory as part of his definition of democracy: "As I would not be a slave, so I would not be a master." True democracy should be of the people, by the people, and for the people, not a system of domination of some people over others. We have gone on to see further victories for an inclusive vision of democracy in the poem embracing immigrants at the foot of the Statue of Liberty, in the suffrage movement giving women the vote, in the labor movement, in the civil rights movement of the 1960s, in the Americans with Disabilities Act, and in the more recent movements for LGBTQ rights and marriage equality. One of the meta-narratives of American history is this narrative of progress toward inclusion. Many variations of quotes about the arc of the moral universe bending toward justice have been used by or attributed to Abraham Lincoln, Martin Luther King, and numerous others, but the origin of that phrase actually goes back to Theodore Parker, a Unitarian minister and abolitionist who pushed the boundaries of early Unitarian theology. As many of us in Unitarian Universalism do, I love this idea of the arc of the universe or of history bending toward justice. But it is also clear that if it does so, it is not in a smooth line. It is just as easy to tell a meta-narrative of American history that is one of backlash, domination, and the stubbornness of injustice. Structural racism and either open or dog-whistle bigotry have never gone away. The average white family in America still has more than 10 times the wealth of the average black family in America. And we are watching both open and covert advocacy for white supremacy at the highest levels of power right now. These awful realities today can be traced back in an unbroken line from the role of slavery in the founding of this nation and in the creation of its wealth, to the counting of slaves in the original Constitution as 3/5 of a person, through the abandonment of Reconstruction, the rise of lynching, Jim Crow, and the Ku Klux Klan, through redlining and white flight, to the rise of mass incarceration and racially biased policing that continues today. We have never repaired that harm. We have never done justice for indigenous peoples. We have never overcome patriarchy. We have struggled with reactions against every wave of immigration. Our militarism has too often led to atrocities around the world. Our dependence on fossil fuels harms the planet. There are still people who want to roll back rights and who claim that this nation was founded for one religion above all others. The labor movement has withered in many ways in recent decades, and the economic inequality that had peaked before the Great Depression is back again with a vengeance. If the arc of the universe and of this nation bends toward justice, it does not happen easily, and it does not happen automatically, and we are currently facing another backlash with a very long way to go. Now, as Unitarian Universalists, we have a deep stake in American democracy and in which direction our democracy goes. Our own story is deeply intertwined with American history, from John Murray bringing universalism from England 6 years before the American Revolution, to early presidents including Adams and Jefferson, who had affiliations or affinities with the early Unitarians in New England, to Olympia Brown and leaders in the women's suffrage movement, to the role of people in our faith in the civil rights struggle and in the fight for marriage equality. We need to be humble about our story because we do not escape participation in the other side of American history, from the slaves owned by Jefferson to the Black Power controversies and more recent struggles over what it really means for us to be an inclusive faith. But there are high values to which we aspire. And as a faith, we explicitly embrace democracy itself in our fifth principle, affirming the use of the democratic process within our congregations and in society at large. We affirm worth and dignity, not just for some people, but for all, even those who oppose us. We affirm equity, justice, and compassion, world community, and the interdependent web of existence. These values are far easier to say than to live by, but our aspiration to inclusive principles echoes the aspiration to inclusive democracy expressed in many of our nation's founding documents. My own life and career have been shaped by Unitarian Universalism for 33 years, including ordained ministry since 2004, and now 5 years as executive director of the American Civil Liberties Union of Colorado. I think of my work at the ACLU as compatible with my ministerial identity and even as a form of ministry. I work as part of this same struggle to make our democracy more inclusive, to lift up and amplify the voices of people most often pushed to the margins, most likely to have their rights denied, whether immigrants or refugees or LGBTQ persons, people with disabilities or people trapped in prison, women facing unwanted pregnancy or people experiencing homelessness. I've been asked a number of times how my work at the ACLU fits with being a minister, even in an interview in the UU World, and I think the headline for the online version of that interview says it best. The common thread is the principle of leaving no one out. If we want a democracy that leaves no one out, the kind of democracy that we aspire to as Unitarian Universalists, that I work for at the ACLU, and that the founders of our nation proclaimed as their highest ideals, then we will all need to show up for democracy. That means being more inclusive in our own lives and our own communities. It means showing up for people in vulnerable or marginalized circumstances, especially if we do it on their terms, not ours. Showing up where they want us to, not waiting for them to come to where we feel comfortable. It means facing our own vulnerabilities too, and showing up for each other, providing a place of warm and loving community to help us even in difficult times. Showing up for democracy means knowing enough about what's going on in the world that we have a better sense of what we need to do. Now, I don't mean getting sucked in as a spectator to an endlessly depressing news cycle, but making an effort to distinguish what is real from what is not, which has suddenly become harder and more important than ever. Part of what is different about this backlash in our democracy from those that have come before is that not only are we seeing the usual forces of racism, patriarchy, fear of outsiders, religious intolerance, and efforts to concentrate wealth and power, but this time we are seeing attacks on the very foundations of democracy itself, such as norms of government, an independent press and judiciary, rights of protest, checks and balances, separation of powers, respect for rule of law, and fair elections. It is democracy itself that is now at stake, so we must be vigilant and aware. Showing up for democracy means lifting up our voices, both individually and together, letting our lights shine, taking the next step, and having faith and hope that we can get to a better place again. Our nation's history shows that progress is not automatic. If we become complacent, things are likely to get worse. But positive change has happened before, and it can happen again. How many of you have showed up for a march or a rally in the past year? Good. Good, because every step that we take matters. Last Saturday, I was at the second Women's March in Denver, and I heard someone complain that we had barely moved after about 2 hours after we had gathered. Someone else said, well, it's because we all showed up, and that's the point, right? If the crowd was small enough that we could just race around the block, what good would that be? Instead, we got to enjoy the endlessly creative signs around us, from protest is patriotic with a picture of a cat, to girls just want to have fundamental human rights, me too and time's up, thanks, you turned my kids into activists, I've seen better cabinets at IKEA, and it's gotten so bad even the introverts are here. Plus some more signs that I can't quote in a sermon, but they were pretty good. Our voices are needed as a counterpoint to toxic voices on white supremacist media, and some toxic voices like those of some that are apparently coming to Fort Collins at CSU this week. It's hard to shut down toxic voices without threatening our own rights to speak and protest, but that makes it all the more important that we shape the narrative wherever we can, strategically ignoring or calling out and countering toxic voices. To be effective, we need to be clear that we will protect people who are threatened. We need to join with intersectionality across causes. If we do so, we will be far more powerful than if we allow ourselves to be splintered. We face serious dangers as a nation that I don't want to downplay, but I'm encouraged by the marches and by special elections with unusually high turnout. Look at Virginia and Alabama and even the election in Douglas County in Colorado that protected public schools by ending a voucher program there. In my work at the ACLU, I am encouraged by the thousands of people who have volunteered, way more than we've ever seen before, so that now it's routine for us to have phone banks in our office for DACA and other causes. To my amazement, the membership of the ACLU of Colorado has grown from about 7,000 before the 2016 election to more than 37,000 today. Because of that, we have been able to hire a voting rights campaign coordinator for the 2018 election. We've added a special attorney for women's reproductive rights and started a podcast called The Purple State Report. We mobilized 17,000 calls and emails on a single bill at the legislature last spring, which led to successful passage of a bill to reform abusive practices at the Division of Youth Corrections. We've won life-saving hepatitis C treatment for thousands of people on Medicaid. virtually eliminated the torture of long-term solitary confinement in Colorado, won multiple settlements in cases of racial bias by police, and ended debtors' prison practices of jailing people who are too poor to be able to afford to pay a fine. Now, I name these examples not just to brag on my staff at the ACLU. We do have a wonderful staff, one of whom, by the way, is part of your congregation right here, Jill, in back. But I say this to point out that even in the difficult political climate that we have today, it is still possible to make progress. You really can make a difference, and I know you are, both here in Fort Collins and wherever else you go. Showing up for democracy can even be fun when we gather together in community, lift each other up, and worship and sing together. It is not our fear, but our joy that will make tyrants tremble and positive change come to our nation again. Living out our values may not always be easy, and it may require stepping outside our comfort zones at times, but that doesn't mean it has to be somber. Even our outrage can be transformed into uplift when we join hands and march forward with determination and solidarity. There is no one right way to show up for democracy. I believe in the motto of get in where you fit in. But if you are at least 18 years old, there is one aspect of showing up for democracy that you should be certain to do, and that is, of course, showing up to vote. It is easy to become cynical about our political choices, but if you are really unhappy about who you can vote for, show up for democracy by running yourself. More people than ever before, especially women, are running for office for the first time this year. And after all, if he who shall remain unnamed could be elected, why not one of us? The 2018 election will be crucial, both here in Colorado and nationwide, and you never know how important your vote might be. I have a friend at the UU Fellowship in Summit County who won a town council seat by a single vote, and we all just watched legislative control of the in the state of Virginia hinge on a court ruling on one single vote. Across our nation's history, countless people have died for the right to vote, so it is something that we should be sure to use and never to take for granted. The story of our democracy is not finished, and we all have a role to play in surviving this difficult chapter and then writing the next one. Thank you for showing up for this community, for our Unitarian Universalist values, and for a democracy that includes you, me, and everyone else in this land. May it be so.